Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president begins this week. I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, and this week, legal expert Ricky Kleeman joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about jury selection, the latest trial developments, and legal strategy.
From the defense point of view, for Donald Trump to be signing checks for Michael Cohen, it would have been something usual because Michael Cohen was working for the Trumps.
The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of On to the Next One, MMAFighting.com's matchmaking podcast. And this week, we discuss the potential futures for some of the notable names from Saturday's excellent UFC 254 event. And one of those notable names, Khabib Nurmagomedov, will not be match made for, despite successfully defending his title, remaining the UFC lightweight champion of the world, because after his victory, he announced his retirement from the sport after he submitted Justin Gaethje in the second round. So that makes things a little bit more interesting for myself. By the way, I am Mike Heck, and being joined with my co-matchmaker, co-host, my best friend at this point, and just all around terrific individual, Mr. Alex Gailey. How are you, my friend?
What a wonderful introduction, my best friend. It's funny, we were kind of sorting out during the card, like, oh, okay, it seems pretty obvious how our show is going to look. There's six main card fights, and, you know, all the winners put on pretty compelling performances that would make us want to talk about them more, make people want to see them fight again more. Seems pretty simple. And then Khabib kind of threw everything into chaos a little bit at the end of the night with that retirement announcement, which in retrospect now, we should be like, oh, okay, it wasn't like super surprising, but for some reason, just not something I'd considered. I don't know why. I was always thinking he was going to do at least one more fight, possibly more. I don't know why. I guess I got, like a lot of people, got dazzled by the 30-0, as if that really matters to Khabib and his team, right? So we shouldn't have been surprised now, and everything makes a lot of sense. I wrote about it this morning, so very good timing for that. But the other thing I want to say, I guess, I meant to retire my gymnastics system. I don't know if it works for... I don't know if it works for sporting events. It certainly works. I think it works for movies and other forms of entertainment. But I think I don't know. I don't think I gave a number on the preview show, but it definitely wasn't like a 10. But this event was pretty close to a 10. If we're just talking about like quality of fights and finishes and how eventful it was, it's about as close as you can get. So we've got like just back to back, just like fire events. So Fight Island, the second trip to Fight Island, may be better than the first.
I was going to ask you, was this the best pay-per-view event of 2020?
My memory is terrible with these things. I am not a Jose Youngs type, but I off the top of my head, I certainly can't remember one that was better. I would say yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably between that and 249, but 249 was, again, like, we're just waiting for something to happen. It was like the rebirth of sports in the United States, so there's obviously that intrigue and all of those things attached to it, but this is a pretty damn good card, and I think the fact that it started at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time just made it that much better, AK, but right now, we do not have a lightweight champion of the world, so rather than matchmake for Khabib, who will not have an opponent anytime soon, or at least we don't think he will, you had an interesting idea, did you not?
I said, well, I guess we just may as well book a vacant lightweight title fight for the UFC. That's the next thing they should do. Certainly, the topic of a tournament has been brought up, to which I laugh because the UFC will not do that because they're very, very tournament adverse, which is bizarre given that they were founded on tournaments that is still held in high regard by the fans, held quite fondly. So I shouldn't say never. I should give them a little more credit than that. It's possible that they kind of hear this groundswell of tournament talk and be like, you know what? This is a good marketing opportunity. We can bring up all the old Hoist Gracie footage, Art Jimerson. And it's great. We'd have Ken Shamrock stuff, you know, and that'd be cool if they did that and said back to tournament days. But it would also take a long time. It's just not how their contracts really work either. I don't think the UFC just don't want to do it that way. So it might be a TV, whoever, one fight for the vacant title. And that's what we got to talk about.
All right. Well, why don't you start us off? Like, what should we do with the lightweight title? You know what? I'm going to pose it this way. What should we do and what will they do? Because it's probably two different answers.
Boy, I mean, what should they do? I still want to see Justin Gaethje fight for a lightweight title again. Maybe I just want to see him on pay-per-view and I want to see him go five rounds because it's just Justin Gaethje is great. Yes, he was soundly defeated by Khabib Nurmagomedov, but to me, that says a lot about Khabib's greatness. Nothing bad about Gaethje. Could he have fought a better fight? Sure, of course. He lost. I'm sure. You know, it's foolish to say he couldn't have fought a better fight. But I don't know if anyone's beating that version of Khabib that showed on Saturday. So I want to be involved. But so that's my should. But I also couldn't really work out a scenario where it makes a lot of sense. So for me, and I definitely talked about this after the fight yesterday. I want Michael Chandler to be involved. They won me over with how they've been promoting him. He's doing all the media rounds. He's been doing 45 minute to an hour long scrums. The man can talk. He's certainly very comfortable with it. And then they had him on the show yesterday. They ran a promo, even though he doesn't have a fight schedule, which I can't remember last time they ever did that. Obviously, the promo is ready because he might have had to replace one of the main eventers, but they used it. That's just smart. Use what you have. So I want Chandler to be involved. And I think the guy I want him to fight is Tony Ferguson for a vacant title. I feel like Tony, yes, he lost to Gaethje, but he still has that. Look, that's what? So he lost one of his last 13 fights. Let's not forget how great this guy is. So Chandler versus Ferguson by matchup, I just think it'd be an entertaining fight. It would feel just very fresh, and it'd be a weird scenario where neither fighter would be coming off a UFC win but getting a title shot. Very 2020, Mike. Very 2020.
So the correct answer of what we should do is just get weird, and it doesn't have, like, you don't have to bill it as a tournament. Like, you don't have to say this is a tournament for lightweight title. You could just like make a bunch of matchups and we can decipher for ourselves that it's like a tournament. So like a quasi tournament to figure this out. So like if McGregor and Poirier are going to fight in January, let's just put like all of these matchups on that same card. And look, like what's going to end up happening is McGregor and Poirier are going to fight for the title. There's just no way around. Like I would be absolutely shocked if that doesn't happen at this point. That's what I think ends up happening. The rest of the guys, you just kind of see it how you see fit. So like in my eyes, same card, Gaethje versus Chandler, because I think Gaethje's the top ranked guy, at least in the UFC's eyes. Chandler is the untested guy in the UFC, so he would kind of be like the bottom of the four. So Gaethje versus Chandler, Gaethje's the top ranked guy, Chandler is there. It's the fight Chandler wants anyway, so there you go. Then Tony Ferguson gets in there. And this is where it gets tricky because you got Dan Hooker ranked at number 5, but Charles Oliveira is ranked number 6. I'd go with Oliveira in that spot. He's coming off he's on a nice little winning streak right now. Hooker's coming off of a loss to Dustin Poirier. Unfortunately, that leaves Mr. Hooker on the sidelines, but the two winners of those fights can square off. Winner of that fight fights against either McGregor or Poirier. I think this is the best way. Unfortunately, none of that is probably going to happen. Hooker can still fight like one of the losers of these matchups. Frankly, if they're just going to do one matchup for the title, I would do Chandler versus Gaethje or Ferguson, like you said. It's just such a cluster F, but let's be real. Poirier-McGregor is going to be the title fight. If that's not the case, I would be completely bewildered and shocked. But let's just put matchups between, you know, Ferguson should be on that card, Chandler should be on that card, Gaethje should be on that card. And then if you want to put Hooker on there, fine. If you want to put Oliveira on there, fine. But that's how they should do it. I know I took us on a journey, but I feel confident that a pretty decent chunk of that will play out in some way.
I thought you were going to go an even longer journey. I thought you were going to go like an 8-man field, an 8-man unofficial field. Because then you could fit in Hooker. Because I guess you said Gaethje, Chandler, Ferguson, the Bronx. And then I guess and then somewhere in there you would mix in Dan Hooker, like I said, sort of the odd man out. Kevin Lee?
I mean, he just, maybe.
Felder?
Then Hooker would have to fight Felder again. But I'd be down to see that. I'd be down to see three to five more rounds of that fight.
Diego Fajera?
Fajera, I like. He was supposed to fight Drew Dober. Then he got injured. He thinks he can come back in December. Dober's going to move on. I think Fajita is better than, like, I think he deserves an opportunity like that. Honestly, I think he's that good. I think he is that legit. He's ranked number 8. The problem is he just lost all that momentum from finishing Anthony Pettis because he hasn't fought since then.
Yeah. The only top 10 guy on my rankings anyway, the top guy, Gregor Gillespie. That's only because we don't know where he's at. But yeah, if he came back, they want to throw him in the tournament. He's 6-1, right? I know the last loss is really sticking in people's minds, but he was on a hell of a run before. There was Khabib talk before he lost to Kevin Lee. So I hope they do, like you said, some sort of informal tournament. Like, just, you know, make the marketing clear that, like, this is a new dawn of the lightweight division. And, you know, and then, yeah, you run a promo with all these names and, But you're right. They don't need to make it official. It'd be cool if they did, but I also understand why they wouldn't.
Dan Hooker's the alternate. There you go. One of these guys can't make it. You slide Hooker in there. So that, see, he's got a role as well. But we will see how that plays out. Lightweight just got very, very interesting heading into 2021. We'll definitely discuss more about Khabib retiring, the legacy he's leaving behind throughout the week on Between the Links, A-Side, and other shows. But 155, as of right now, is the biggest story heading into 2021. So, I mean, do we even match make for Gaethje, or do we just kind of do that? Like, we basically just did that, right? Like, Gaethje should be...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else...
He's in the mix.
Yeah, he's in the mix.
He's in the mix. He's at the top of... The mix, I guess, doesn't really have dimensions, but if the mix had dimensions, he's at the top of the mix.
Yes, I would agree with that. So let's go to the co-main event. We saw Robert Whittaker defeat Jared Cannonier. Almost finished him in the third round. What a great fight that was, by the way, at 185 pounds. And it seems like all signs are pointing towards Robert Whittaker fighting Israel Adesanya once again. I think that will happen eventually. I don't think it happens next for Adesanya. And I think that the fight between Darren Till and Jack Hermansson has gotten much bigger since Saturday. And the reason is Adesanya's not going to want to wait 6 months to fight again. I just don't see it happening. Like, where Adesanya fights, like 85, 205, I have no clue. But he's not going to want to wait till April to fight Robert Whittaker. And Whittaker can take all the time off he wants. The man wants to have the holidays, be there, and focus on the birth of his child. Like, this is kind of a weak answer, but it's what everyone else wants anyways. His next fight will be for the belt. I mean, that's what I'm going to say. I have no opponent. I assume it will be Adesanya. It absolutely should be a title shot. When that happens, no idea. But his next fight should be for the belt. Kind of a weak answer, AK.
No, it's not a weak answer. It's a logical answer. There is no reason that Robert Whittaker should have to fight anyone again before getting the Izzy rematch. As you said, look, the happiest guy besides Whittaker for that win was Darren Till, because Darren Till knows. I beat Jack Hermansson. I'm getting that title shot. There's some buzz between me and Izzy ever since even before he moved up to 185. There's some talk there. So he has to get that win. Hermansson, it's not quite as clear. I wouldn't mind it. I believe he was one of the names that Izzy mentioned. He mentioned Jared Cannonier first, of course, after beating Paulo Costa. And I think Hermansson was in there. I think he threw his name in there. Izzy's really smart with setting up his next fight. So it wouldn't be terrible. I mean, Hermansson, again, he lost to Cannonier. That's fine. But a win over Till, especially, you know, a finish, you could talk people into it. It wouldn't be a blockbuster pay-per-view, but at least Izzy gets himself another challenger. But Till would certainly be easy. He beats Hermansson. It's a lock. He's getting in there. I don't have much more to add besides, Whittaker, enjoy your holidays. Blessings to your child that's coming in January, and just wait to fight Izzy again. Many people have gotten rematches for less without having to get two very good wins, which he has done. He's the number one contender still.
Yeah, I think that fight is much more important. And I think it's more important. I think it's just as important, more important than the win itself, is that Till or Hermansson finishes that fight very quickly and is able to turn around very quickly. Like, they have to be like, their mentality is, I have to go finish this guy in the first or second round and then get ready to fight in January or February. Because I think that's the only way that they skip the queue and skip Robert Whittaker. And that's if Adesanya decides to stay at 185. Like Dana White's been saying, it's great to have options, and that man has a lot of them. So how about Jared Cannonier, AK? First loss since dropping down to 185. He had a very good showing for himself in defeat. I think a lot of people kind of like overlook how good Cannonier was in that fight. Those leg kicks were great. The ability he had to survive that onslaught, I thought that fight was over. He gets up to his feet and almost knocks out Whittaker in the third round of that fight. It was a closer fight than the scores indicated. He does have finishes of David Branch, Anderson Silva, and Jack Hermansson along the way. He's despite the loss, he's still in a pretty decent spot. What is next for the Killer Gorilla?
Yeah, it's not Jared Cannonier's fault that a one-legged Whitaker is like 90% as effective as 100 as like full strength Whitaker. Like that leg was after a round was like getting killed. He was getting killed. And even though he wasn't selling it, you could tell Whitaker it took away some of his explosiveness, but again, he's such a great athlete. It taking away some of his explosiveness just made him kind of rely more on his fundamental technical skills, which we know he has. Cannonier just got beat. You know, he didn't have a bad performance at all. He got beat by a better fighter. That's, guess what? That happens to a lot of fighters. That's life. This matchup, I think I saw floating around on social media. I can't remember exactly who said it. It might have been more than one person. And once I saw it, I was like, okay, it just makes sense. I can't get out of my head. Paulo Costa. Cannonier, Paulo Costa, right? It seems like a no-brainer. It'd be an awesome, awesome fight. Someone's getting knocked out. Great test for both guys. Whoever wins gets a title shot. It's simple. I let's not overthink this. We were talking before the show, and I was saying I think for the most part this card is outside of a couple of names pretty easy to match people up, and this was one of them. So Cannonier, Paulo Costa, I think everyone wants to see it. Let's just do that.
Yeah, I mean that's my pick too. The other option that I do have, Yoel Romero. I'm cool with that too. If you want to do Cannonier versus Romero, sign me up for that. But at the end of the day, Cannonier should have already gotten his freaking title shot. Let's give him the opportunity to get one back against the last man to fight for the title. So, heavyweight division, Alexander Volkov puts away Walt Harris in the second round. Drago looked great in the fight. He picked Walt apart, eventually got the stoppage after just a painful, brutal knee to the solar plexus. And this is interesting, AK, because it's kind of tough at the same time because there's a bit of a logjam in the heavyweight division. Like, we have a lot of fights booked up. Stipe versus Francis Ngannou is the heavyweight title fight that isn't going to happen until at least March of next year, as it looks right now. So, to me, this is a two-horse race. It's Alistair Overeem and it's Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Both are fine. Volkov wants the Jairzinho fight. I'm okay with that. I think Overeem is more in the title hunt than both of those guys right now because of who he is, the storyline of one final run at the title. So I say, let's give Volkov what he wants. Let's give him Jairzinho. Overeem can fight Derek Lewis, win or lose, depending on how he fares against Curtis Blaydes. That's my pick. What do you think?
I'm glad you mentioned the logjam at heavyweight. That is what has made some of our... We had to pick a lot of heavyweight fights over the last like couple months or so, and that's what has made it tricky is we kind of keep having the same names lumped together because nobody can really move in the division. This is sucks, as Francis Ngannou always so eloquently puts on his tweets. And of course, he's the man who would know the most how much this situation is sucks, as it were, because he should have had a title fight like 4 months ago. I don't know. But I agree. I think Alistair Overeem is the way to go. They were supposed to fight St. Petersburg, Russia, April of last year. I think when we did the matchmaking for Overeem after his last fight, I said Volkov, if he beats Harris, which is what happened. This was in September. I said it then. Still the fight to make. So, yeah, he named a few people in his post-fight. I think he was saying, like, oh, you know, I want to get Volkov did. He said, I want to get some names that get me towards the title. He mentioned Overeem. He mentioned Jairzinho. He tried to mention Jairzinho. Thankfully, he was helped out with the pronunciation on that one. Still difficult for a non-native English speaker and us as well. And JDS, he mentioned as well. But JDS is supposedly inexplicably being matched up with, like, Ciryl Gane. So I don't know what that's about. Dana White mentioned it. I've seen nothing else on that front since, but it's at least in the works, I guess. That's an odd one. So, yeah, Overeem's the way to go.
So, Overeem for you. I'm fine with that, too. Rozenstruik for me. Either way, works. Flip a coin. I'm cool with either of them, but just a tough position because, I mean, it just is what it is. It's the heavyweight division right now. So, we go from heavyweight back to the 185-pound division, AK, with one Mr. Philip Haas, who disposed of poor Jacob Malkoon in just 18 seconds, one of the original super prospects of our great sport. He suffered some hard losses early in his career. He picked himself back up, dusted himself off, paid his dues internationally, and now he's in the UFC getting highlight reel finishes. So, my friend, where does Phil Haas go from Saturday night?
First of all, you and Casey, you mischievous little rugrats, guys, I think you guys got me in trouble. Because you made me talk about Phil Haas in the show after and kind of explain some of the trepidation I had over Phil Haas being on the main card. And I got a message from someone purporting to be Phil Haas' brother, Lamar Haas. This is on Twitter, so it might be fake. And he was not happy. I believe, maybe, I assume he watched the post-fight show. He was not happy with me. So you guys might have gotten me in trouble. I said by the end of the day that Haas was like super impressive, and I was happy for him to make his. So I get it, though. I think there was some joking in there about like, oh, why did it take Phil Haas so long to get to the UFC? And I look, sometimes we joke too much. So if Lamar Haas, if you're listening to this show, I apologize for any insult that I put forward, because maybe I was out of line. But this guy's a little tricky, because I don't want him. You know, we were joking after. It was such an impressive performance. He has faced such high-level experience already, more so than most guys who have just made their UFC debut. So I understand the urge to push him up. But I was just kind of picking out guys who I think are around his range. I'm just Nassourdine Imavov. Okay, I know, whatever. People say it's not a sexy matchup. He's another good prospect. In my rankings, they're around the same range. I have other. I feel like Wellington Turman, who was actually supposed to fight this week, but got COVID, and Bartosz Fabinski, if you want a guy with a little more UFC experience. So I know these names right now are just a fly buzzing in people's ears, but I'm not wanting to put Haas against a name veteran at this point. I'm not doing it.
Well, at least we get to disagree on something, AK, because I think he has put himself in a position where he has no limitations.
Wow.
Like, I feel like you can't really slow roll him anymore, because you slow rolled him as much as you could for his first UFC fight. He demolished his opponent. There's no need to slow roll him any longer. I'm not saying we throw him a top 15 or anything like that, but I think he does need a vet test against someone who would be hungry to take out a prospect that people are excited about. And because this man did so well building up his last fight against a big prospect, I say we give him another opportunity to get that taste out of his mouth. So my pick is one Phil Haas against Gerald Meerschaert. Megatron versus GM3. I like that idea. It's a good step up. If he beats GM3, there you go. Then we can start sniffing out top 15 opponents, or at least getting much closer. But I think that's a good step. I put Meerschaert, what, 30, 35 in that division? Haas can't be that far off. Can he?
He certainly can be, sir. In my rankings of approximately about 70 middleweights, give or take, I already debuted Haas. I put him in at 49, which I know like, oh, 49, it's so low for a guy to put 18 seconds. That's really high for guys. That's 21 spots higher than a bunch of people who have already fought multiple times in the UFC. And I have Gerald maybe a little too high. I don't know, 26, so top 30. I get it. Look, I get it. Like, I was going to say, we can't match him up with a guy like Gerald. Gerald has so much more experience. Gerald has more experience than, like, everybody. So
the whole world.
Yeah. So there's really at some point you're going to have to match him up with someone. I don't hate it. Again, I'm just a little more reluctant to move Phil up. I don't want to talk about it anymore, because you're going to get me in trouble with Lamar Haas. So I'm sticking with my story. I want him around guys with similar UFC experience, but I get if you're going to go up, you could certainly have worse matchups than Gerald.
Yes. But what I think is going to happen is that one of these upcoming 85 matchups over the next 3 or 4 weeks, someone's going to fall out and Phil Haas is going to get inserted in.
Yeah, this is one of those guys like we've been saying recently, probably not someone we can really reasonably matchmake for. He's going to get some sort of short notice fight that we can't even predict. So put him on that list, really. That's probably the most accurate prediction we could make.
Yes.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank & Trust. Members FDIC.
And now we get to one of the questions that I've been getting the most, AK. Emails, tweets, post-show questions. What is next for Lauren Murphy after her submission win over Lilia Shakarova? And I've thought about this quite a bit over the last 24 hours or so. I waxed poetically about it on the post-fight show. And last week on this very program, I said that Jessica Andrade should either get a title shot, fight Lauren Murphy, or fight Cynthia Calvillo. Shevchenko is getting ready to fight Jennifer Maia on November 21st. Lauren Murphy is hilarious. Said, you know what? Screw it. Take Maia out and put Andrade in. And then Lauren Murphy would get the winner of that fight. That's what she wanted. So it's a little too late for that unless something bad happens to Jennifer Maia and she can't make it. And I hate to say this because I like Cynthia Calvillo and it sucks that she tested positive for COVID-19. Unfortunately for her, the fact that Lauren stayed on the card, took the risk, she deserves to have the lead between the two, in my opinion. So my pick, we do Murphy versus Andrade. Clear-cut number one contender fight. Keeps both women busy between Shevchenko's title defense and whenever she's ready to come back and defend again. Because let's remember, Valentina Shevchenko, heavily favored to retain her title. She hasn't fought more than twice in a year since signing with the UFC. The last time she fought three times in 1 year was in 2015, and two of those fights were outside of the UFC. Now, I will say this, recency aside, she did fight three times from June of last year to February of this year.
Okay.
So maybe she'll be more active now. I just don't want to necessarily bank on that. So put Murphy and Andrade, December 12th, December 19th, winner gets the next title shot. And Calvillo is going to have to fight Caitlin Chookagian or somebody like that. Like that's just where we're at this point. I don't know. What do you think?
This was tough. This was the, I'm like you, man. This was the one that I just could not find an easy answer. I feel like there's no home run answer. In a perfect world, you know, Lauren Murphy could wait and get that title shot no matter what, whether it's, you know, whoever gets it ahead of her. But again, then we're talking about waiting 6 months, 7 months, 8 months. I really have no idea. And I don't think she wants to wait on the sideline that long. She wants to fight, and she wants to fight for the world title now. How crazy is it, by the way, that, you know, we always get on the UFC for not booking fights enough ahead of time and not giving fights, you know, proper time to get hyped up and marketed. And they booked this Maia Shevchenko fight well ahead of time. It's not even until next month, I think, end of third week of November, something like that. And it's not until, and yet during all this time now, it feels like Andrade and Murphy have hurdled Maia as far as fan interest goes. There wasn't a lot of heat to the Maia Shevchenko matchup to begin with. I mean, there was like a nod of like, oh yeah, she's a deserving challenger. Just, you know, and at the time we couldn't think of anyone that should be higher. We're like, yeah, okay. Then Andrade comes up, huge win. Murphy keeps her winning performance going, looks amazing against a newcomer, but took care of business like she's supposed to. And suddenly, I think I kept forgetting that Maia was even getting the title shot. And when the time the fight rolls around next month, you're gonna have people going like, why isn't Andrade getting this title shot? Why isn't Lauren Murphy getting this title shot? You know, I think you're going to have a lot of those questions, forgetting that this fight was booked like 2 months ago, as fights should be. So kind of a no-win situation for the UFC there. I feel a little bad for the matchmakers in that case. But gosh, Jessica Andrade, last week I said I wanted to just see her fight Shevchenko. So I can't go against that. I did not think it was fair to Murphy, if she got a win against Shakarova, to have to fight Andrade, and I wanted to win. So, but again, there's just all these contradicting things going on. I think the Cynthia Calvillo rebooking is the way to go, but But then there's almost a question of like, what was the point of the fighting Shakarova then, if she's just gonna have to go through Cubio anyway? But I think Andrade should get the title shot against the Maya Shevchenko winner. And then if Murphy wants to stay busy, and I think it's fair to Calvillo as well, I think she's going to want to fight. I think you go Calvillo Murphy. I think people have the tone of my voice, how strongly I feel about this. Lauren Murphy should be getting a title shot, should be getting a guaranteed title shot. She is, but she will not. And I think she will have to fight again. And I think it will just be rebook Calvillo.
And here's what both ladies said after their wins, Andrade and Murphy. I don't want to wait. Like, I don't want to wait. I want to fight. Mm-hmm. So let's just fight them. Like, just fight each other and call it a day. Because, like you said, if Murphy just waits, she might be waiting a year to fight again. And she sure as hell isn't going to do that. So, but good on Lauren Murphy. And I said, and I think we were all in agreement during the post-fight show, A+. She was, she besides Khabib, I think she is the highest grade of anybody. A+, the way she delivered from start to finish. Because she did everything she could with what she had and then some. She literally could not do any more besides going to Valentina's house and slapping her in the face. Like, that's literally all she could do. And she did it. So good on her.
Robert Whittaker would be my second star of the night. If only I love Freewheeling Whittaker. He's just nonstop laughing now when he does interviews now. Like, he laughs at the questions. He gets very curt but polite answers. He's pretty much fully embraced the absurdity of MMA, and he seems in a much better place than he was when he was, the stress of being champion and all the, and having to deal with the media. Then whatever he's doing to take care of his mental health and keep doing it, Robert, because he seems to be loving life right now and making very good decisions.
Despite like this cluster that is kind of confusing and we don't know what the hell is going to happen, it's the most interesting the women's flyweight division has ever been. Like, it's not like the division's been around for 20 years, but since its inception, it's been kind of looked at as just like, now we got 35ers, going down. We got 15ers going up. It's just like this colossal mix of misfits in a way. And the division just hasn't gotten that interesting because Valentina, just no one's going to beat Valentina. But, man, just getting the road to Valentina, this is the best and most interesting the women's 25 division has ever been, right?
I think at the end of the year, Mike, when we look back on some of the best stories of 2020, I think the rise of sort of the flyweight of the women's flyweight division is going to be up there with sort of the realization of the depth of the men's bantamweight division, which some are calling now the deepest division in all of MMA, especially if you add in Bellator. So kudos to the matchmakers and of course the athletes in the flyweight division for really, really making it a division to watch.
Absolutely. What a change for Lauren Murphy over the years. This is just, she's been a great story herself, just seeing where she's gone and kind of gone from, and she's admitted herself, kind of a laughingstock to a title contender in a matter of like 18 months to 2 years. So good on her. She's definitely a factor at 125. But I'm interested to hear where your thought process is at, AK, with the first fight of the main card, the ending of the rivalry between Magomed Ankalaev and Iwan Kutalaba. Ankalaev knocks Kutalaba stiff in the final minute of the first round, exclamation point city. He can now move on as a top 15 guy and fight ranked guys, AK, like he should have been doing in the first place. But Ankalaev looked phenomenal on Saturday. He deserves a reward going through this whole ordeal, booking, cancellation, COVID. It was crazy. Where does he go from that win on Saturday?
He can move on from Iwan Kutalaba. We all can move on from Ankalaev Kutalaba because that saga, again, it was really only 8 months ago when they first fought, but that saga did really seem to go on forever. It was booked multiple times. Where does he go? Man, I mean, look, people have been calling him a sleeper in the 205 division for a while. And with the way the division's shaped up now, I mean, that sleeper, he woke up in a big way last night for anyone who wasn't aware how talented this guy is or why he's been in the top 15 of the ranks, I think, for the last couple of years. There's like two really good matches I like. I'll say the one I favor the most. I think Misha Cirkunov, I think, is a good way. Maybe I have Misha ranked too high still. He's definitely, obviously, he hasn't fought since last September. So I don't know how much he's dropped in the rankings of some people's eyes or even in the UFC's rankings. I should check that. But I think it's a good style matchup. Again, two guys who I think are right on the door of the top 10. I think whoever wins that probably gets a top 10 spot at light heavyweight. Misha we haven't seen since last September, so hopefully he's healthy, and it's just sort of travel issues and how difficult it is to train and prepare for things during this pandemic era we're living in, and otherwise I hope he's 100% healthy and we can see that matchup made.
So right now Ankalaev is ranked number 11, Cirkunov ranked number 10.
Oh, there we go. Yeah,
I so it's actually. Up just, yeah.
I like that idea, but I'm ready to get all sorts of weird. AK,
this has been
It's been a crazy year for Mr. Ankalaev, and I think we should just get a little crazier after this year. So, you said Serkinov, which I liked, the number 10 guy. And we have two guys in this division who are looking to break the wall down. So I say we just match them up. Let's go a spot above that. So give me Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker. I want it. I need it. Walker's ranked number 9. I already said last week I wanted to see Jimmy Crute versus Volkan Ozdemir. I would have given him Ozdemir had I not said that last week with Jimmy Crute on last week's program. Ankalaev versus Walker is just bananas, weird, wild, and fun. I'm in, AK. That's what I want to see.
I liked Walker Crute, so I cannot recommit Walker. the other name I really love, which Nikita Krylov, which is one I think I saw people mentioning. Ankalaev is again. There's there's 5 or 6 guys just right outside the top 10, and I think they slot right into fights with each other like perfectly.
A lot of people I saw on Twitter wanted to see Ankalaev versus Prochazka. No way. Nope. We're not doing that now. I want to see it. I don't want to see it now though. That is to be
we
like.
We want to see Prochazka booked. We got to get this guy booked.
Yeah. I mean.
That's exciting.
Yes. I thought we were going to see Prochazka Krylov already, or Prochazka versus Rakic. I mean, that's the fight to make. I don't understand. I don't get it. But that's fun. I mean, anything for. I just want to see Ankalaev fight. You know, a top 10 guy. He's that good. I just want to see how good he really is. Mm-hmm. As we move on to the wild card round, where we choose a fighter that we have not match made for yet, and we go ahead and do it right now. I love the wild card round. Favorite part of the show outside of the listener submissions. AK, start us off, my man. What is your UFC 254 post-mortem wild card selection?
Well, first, my usual rundown for guys who I think neither of us are going to pick. Joel Alvarez, great win, make weight. That's what's next for you, buddy. Miranda Maverick, keep working on that PhD. What a young, brilliant talent. Tai Tuivasa, stop doing shoeys. That's just general life advice. He doesn't really need advice from me. He got a good win over Stefan Struve. Got back in the win column. Just stop doing shoeys. They're disgusting. It's not cute. So I went with, I tried to match up with was Shavkat Rakhmonov, who I boldly stated on Twitter, I think is as exciting a prospect as Khamzat Chimaev. Okay, if we're talking about guys at 170, this guy's legit. Obviously, Khamzat is too, but I think what Rakhmonov did against Alex Oliveira is as impressive as the Gerald Meerschaert win. Certainly, more impressive than the John Phillips or the other Reese McKee win. So, and people gotta realize he's more experienced than average for a UFC debutant, though he is just 1-0 now, and he's also only 25 years old. So, some names I threw out there. He was originally supposed to fight another veteran, Alizio Zaleski, instead. So that makes a lot of sense, but. Zaleski, he was removed from that fight because of an LCL tear. So, you know, at the time he's not getting surgery as far as I know, but the time frame there is a little shaky. I don't know if we don't know when he'll be back. Don't know how when they're going to want to book Rakhmonov again. Munir Lazez, who was supposed to fight again on October 17th, he got COVID. Maybe if that clears up, we can match him up. Diego Lima was a name I really want to see him fight, but he's again, neck injury. You can't play around with those. I assume he'll be recovered soon, but we haven't been given a timetable on that. So going with someone with just a little more UFC experience than Rakhmonov and also a very solid record before joining the promotion, Takashi Sato. He's a little bit of a question mark as well. He was supposed to fight Daniel Rodriguez August 22nd. He was ruled medically unfit to compete after weighing in, because we don't know what happened. I assume it was tied to the weight cut and hopefully nothing more serious. But yeah, that's the name I'm throwing out there because just wanted to book Rakhmonov again. I think it's a big, big prospect. I will have some reader submissions later, which are probably more interesting than what I suggested. But Takashi Sato, Shavkat Rakhmonov is a fight that I'm eyeing.
Well, this happens from time to time. I also chose Shavkat Rakhmonov because he was one. I mean, in my opinion, if we're going like 5 stars of the night, he's in that top 5, in my opinion. I mean, the man just took out Cowboy Oliveira, who missed weight in his UFC debut in the first round. Like, good things happen. Yeah, he beat Chunky Cowboy. Like, that was super impressive. And he deserves something really good after that. I'm not ready to give him a top 15 guy. He called out Donald Cerrone. I'm not all that thrilled with that idea. But if they do it, I'm okay with it. I have two names for Rakhmonov. I think he's right there, man. Two guys where I look at them and I say, you know what? You're doing well. You've been damn impressive. But let's see how good you really are. Let's see if you are top 15 material. So I have two. Rachmaninoff versus Daniel Rodriguez, or my first choice is Rachmaninoff versus Jake Matthews. Give him a step up with a win, knock on the door of a top 15 spot. That's either of those two guys works for me, but that's the kind of step up I want to see. Guys like, you know, 25 to 20 range, and I think both those guys are probably in that neck of the woods right now.
There's some really good looking kind of welter. You mentioned Daniel Rodriguez, so we were talking about Rachmaninoff, Sean Brady, of course, absolute blue chipper. That sort of middle of the pack right now of younger welterweight guys, that's exciting. That's like guys you could see like in the top 15 in like a year, 18 months from now. Like, damn, this is nice. This division is looking nice again.
Yeah, Brady versus Bilal Muhammad's a great fight. I'm very excited for that.
That's a good one.
Do we have any listener matchmaking submissions?
Hold on. What happened to Casey Kenney? What happened to your boy Casey Kenney?
I said this like, Casey Kenney, I mean, there's this one option for him right now. Like, if he wants to fight somebody relatively name-wise in the top 15 before the year is over, he's going to have to fight Marab on short notice, and I don't know how excited Marab would be to do that. I went heading into UFC 254 with a wild card pick ready to go. Casey Kenney versus Rob Font. That was going to be my pick. But Rob Font had to go ahead and book a fight with, I don't know, Marlon Moraes for his comeback. I guess that's okay.
Sure.
I mean, Casey Kenney would have been cool too. But no, but seriously, like, as soon as I heard that, I was like, well, there goes my wild card pick. And then like Miranda Maverick I was thinking about, but I was just like, she should fight like Justine Kish or somebody like that. Like, yeah. I don't want to rush her. You know what I mean? It's just all the winners. Like, you don't want to rush, or they missed weight, or like, it's. I feel like Rachmaninoff deserves the shine.
Yeah, definitely. This is a guy. I wish they'd been able to hype him up a little bit more, but I think after this win, I don't know if he's going to get that Chimaev push. The one thing I'll say about Chimaev, I'm always kind of talking about how like we're pushing him a little too fast. Part of that is he does make very good use of his English. You know what I mean? Obviously, he has limited English, but he's picked up, you know, the sort of the Khabib smash thing, which people like, you know, people in North America like. And just has enough English and is very, very good with his words when it comes to kind of generating headlines and calling people out. So that is something that Chimaev has over a lot of other prospects. So I'll definitely give him that, in addition to him being, you know, pretty damn amazing fighter. What do you want first, Mike? Do you want DMs or do you want email I got?
Let's do the DMs first. Then we'll do the email. DMs, I'm intrigued by emails.
So DMs, I got one from Aronski. That's at Aronski, ending S-K-I-I, three I's. Anyway, you guys can try and find this guy online. He DM'd me. He had some good. So Rachmaninoff was good. You know, he mentioned Rachmaninoff. Rocco Martin was the name he threw out there. And I didn't want to steal it because I was like, yeah, I could see that. I could see Rocco Martin. Jesse Ronson, I like, except I believe Jesse Ronson probably has his eyes on returning to 155. I don't know if he wants to be fighting top welterweight prospects like Shavkat Rachmaninoff. It's not kind of a fun thing to do. He liked Casey Kenney versus Song Yadong, or I think this might be too much too soon. I believe he's saying Rafael Assuncao.
I actually like that. I think that's a huge jump. I think that's a good fight.
I mean, he'd love it. Kenny would sign on for that in a friggin' second. he likes Ankalaev as Krylov. I thought you mentioned this on the show yesterday. Phil Haas as Zach Cummings. I think this is one of the names you were
Yeah, that was one of the names I threw out there.
It makes sense. So again, we're talking about veteran guys in that sort of Meerschaert range. Tui Vasov versus Philip Linz. Linz, I don't know if he's going to be for the UFC anymore. Or Romanov. Romanov wins the next fight. Thank you from Aronsky Hill. He said loves the show and thanks for considering his picks. And then Harry Lipsky, who's messaged me in the past. I keep telling this guy, this is at HarryLips5 on Twitter. I keep telling this guy, get your picks in like Saturday night and we'll try and get on the show. So he got it in, buddy. He got it in time. He likes Gaethje McGregor for the belt, of course, as I'm sure the UFC does would as well. He apologized with apologies to Dustin Poirier. The Whitaker-Izzy rematch, kind of near Costa, Volkov, Overeem. He also mentioned JDS, but again, there's the Gone thing. Walt Harris, Augusto Sakai. Is that the guy we think, Mike, that we could finally get that feel-good moment for Walt Harris? Sakai is not an easy out.
It's a tough fight.
Yeah. There's a huge athleticism and speed gap, which we saw. I mean, even against Volkov, we saw Harris kind of had that advantage. So I'm not against it, but like we said, we kind of want to see them bring in a real jobber for Harris to have that feel good moment. Chandler Tony Ferguson and Murphy Andrade. I saw a lot of Murphy Andrade suggestions. It does, I don't know. That's just so unfair to Murphy, I feel. This is where we get wild. I ran into the wild west of random Twitter onto the next one solicitations. I won't read them all, but for Shavkat, we got our first fighter volunteering for an On to the Next One. Yes, PFL and UFC veteran Glyco Franca chimed in when we asked who should Shavkat fight next. He said me.
Nice.
So the UFC wants to bring Glyco Franca back, a fine welterweight talent, to fight Rakhmonov. He has volunteered. So there we go. He's got a little bit of a name. People said Khamzat, Michael Chiesa. Come on. Tyron Woodley. And at Adam Knows Better on Twitter with the lovely CM Punk. So there you go. Nice. Very good. Yes, that's what people want. I don't want to run through everything we have here. And we already talked about Kenny and Kalayev. Murphy, again, there was just no good solution for this. I want to see if people have smarter solutions than us. People are throwing out straw weight names. No, these people, the guys, you haven't been helpful with.
Shamayev.
Yeah, I'm sure Shamayev is in there. Phil Haas, well, now you mentioned it. Phil Haas, Shamayev, stood up for that. Someone else said Eric Anders, Kevin Holland. No.
They both have fights booked.
Okay. Edmund Shabazian. That's not terrible.
That's not terrible.
Though I think the push of Shabazian should continue. I want him not matched up with another prospect. And Christoph Jocko. My boy Jocko's got to get. Wait, I think he is booked.
Is he? I thought he was booked, and then something happened.
Right. That actually sounds more familiar. Robert Whitaker, we had some comments. Mostly just people saying he's going to lose to Izzy again. And I think maybe he would, but that's no reason not to make the rematch, guys. Come on. And Miranda Maverick, the last one I'll read, the random solicitations. Miranda Maverick from Javon Johnson. He says, either Maria Agapova or Alexa Grasso. I could see Agapova. That might make sense. Grasso, I don't want to see that.
I do not want to see that. Honestly, and this is no disrespect to Maria Agapova, I think Miranda Maverick would just annihilate her. Just murk her.
Wow.
It's just not fair. Maverick would run through her.
The Miranda Maverick Top Gun jet.
Yeah.
It's not even a train. It's a jet.
Yeah.
And then from regular review listener and contributor at Mighty Magic Mart on Twitter. He likes Ankalaya versus Uzdemir. He just wants to move him up in the top 10. And what else? And then Casey Kenny versus either Song Yadong, which was mentioned before, or the winner of Kelleher Ricky Simone.
Maybe if Simone wins. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think Kelleher wants to go to 35 anytime soon.
Oh, right. He's enjoying the bantamweight fights at 145 that he's been doing.
He sure is.
Not cutting weight, not having to worry about. Yeah, no, he's been very smart about it. Yeah, hey, maybe Kenny would go up to 145 to do the 145 bantamweight dance. I don't know.
Maybe.
So there you go. We had quite a slew. I could have read a lot more, but there's only so many hours in the day, and I want to thank you everyone who commented on Twitter, sent in replies, and especially thank you for people who DM'd and emailed. Did I say that email's from Tristan Gordet, another one of our usual viewers? Tristan Gordet.
Tristan Gordet sent the email? Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Christoph Jocko is supposed to fight this coming Saturday against Mahmoud Muradov.
I was like, when are Till and Hermanson fighting? And you guys like, next week? I'm like, what?
Till and Hermanson is December, I think.
I really have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's
Uriah Hall, Anderson Silva, right? That's next week, right?
That's next week, yes.
I'm back, guys.
There you go. And listen, if you guys are listening to this right now and you're like, oh, I want to get my suggestion in, get him in there. We'll talk about it on the Twitter, all right? AK is at Alexander K. Lee. I am at MikeHeck_JR. Join us next week as we discuss the fallout and futures for some of the notable names of UFC Vegas 12? Is that what we're going with here? UFC Fight Night, Silva versus Hall, or Hall versus... Listen, at the end of the day, this is it's supposed to be the final fight of the legendary career of Anderson Silva. So back-to-back events with legend retirements. He takes on Uriah Hall. Really good featherweight bout between Andre Feely and Bryce Mitchell is the co-main event. Greg Hardy versus Maurice Green is on that card. By the way, just because we mentioned Walt Harris, I think the winner of that fight should fight Walt Harris next. That's just my pick. But as far as this week's show goes, we are out of time. For Alex K. Lee, I am Mike Heck. And as always, folks, do not take this too seriously. MMA is supposed to be fun. It is our job to make it that way. So we'll see you next time right here on To the Next One, the podcast.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.